Hi everyone, we are back for season two now of the Denver Music Community Podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Boots. We've been gone for a few months. What have we been up to?
We moved. Things have been busy.
Things have been busy. I got a new job.
Yeah, and so we're switching things up just a little bit. The format's going to be slightly looser. This episode, I interviewed Paul Levine, who's the CEO of Swallow Hill.
And I interviewed Shannon Weber, who is the co-director of Girls Rock Denver. But also, going back to your previous point, we will be changing things up a little bit, but don't worry, we will still be coming at you once a month.
And at the end of each episode, we're going to include a full track of a local band who has submitted music to us.
So the things that we'll be changing is that we won't be doing reviews anymore. We just didn't feel like that was really what we felt strongest at doing. And we will be replacing that with that track that Sean had spoken about.
And so the track we're going to be including at the end this time is something from The Beach People, and it's called Loya.
And now to our interview with Shannon Weber, co-director of Girls Rock Denver.
Good to see you.
Yeah, I'm very excited. So anyway, start with and tell me what is your name and what your kind of role in Girls Rock Denver is.
My name's Shannon Weber. My pronouns are she and her. And I got started with Girls Rock Denver because my band, Dangerous Nonsense, went to a fundraiser. Because Girls Rock is actually this international movement that I think what is the most obvious like takeaway about what they do is that they put on these summer camps for girls. It's kind of how it started. That's all around music, and using really music as a vehicle to help set the stage for folks to experience empowerment, to find their own voices, and to experiment with their own ideas in a safe space. And so we didn't have a camp at the time, but these two young women decided to start one in Denver. So they put on a film screening with the Denver Roller Derby team and did like a fundraiser for actually October is considered Girls Rocktober. And we would do shows, like 50 shows in 50 states, where like every single state would put on a fundraiser to benefit the larger like Girls Rock Camp Alliance. That's the international organization. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they had sign-up sheets to volunteer, and we all signed up. And that was in 2000. That might have been in like 2009 or something
that. You've been with the organization for quite a few years at this point.
Yeah, so I've been, I'm one of very few founding members that are still involved. Right now, my role is a co-director. We're all completely volunteer. So if folks are available, a lot of times, like we kind of just fill in what's needed. But it has a lot of challenges being completely volunteer run.
Oh, for sure.
And it's also not equitable to run things that way. I mean, if we live... We got to be honest, we live in a society that where if you value something, you do that with money.
Yeah.
We're doing a lot of work to bring ourselves to a more sustainable and like more, more healthy position, you know?
So if you can go back a little bit, can you talk to us about how Girls Rock Denver serves the Denver community? I know you did mention those summer camps. Is there other things that the organization does to support individuals, female? I also understand that it is non-binary individuals, it's trans women, young women as well. Is there other ways that Girls Rock Denver does then serve that community?
One of the things, you know, we've been really, we haven't been as active during the pandemic, but Kate Warner is our gear person, like our gear coordinator. Mm-hmm. And this year, they actually built a battery-operated mobile rig to bring like a PA system anywhere.
Oh, super cool.
Yeah, it was. We actually had the privilege to provide sound support for a few different protests and different organizations, like Black Men Feed Denver, and a young Indigenous rights group, the Pride Liberation March. We did that the last couple of years. So really doing what we can to bring, you know, any instruments or gear to communities that already kind of have their own thing going and kind of just get out of the way and help folks, you know, with access to amplify their own voices.
Right. You know? So, yeah, it sounds like you provide both instruments and amplification where people would like to have it or need it that wouldn't have access to it.
That's where I've been the most involved because I get kick out of the gear.
I don't blame you. So it sounds like Girls Rock Denver started far before it ever came to Denver. Do you know much about the origins of Girls Rock? And if so, can you speak to that?
Yeah, actually, in Portland, I believe it was there. So like Beth Ditto and oh my gosh, what is her name? She's in Sleater-Kinney. And she was in Portlandia. Carrie Brownstein.
Yes.
So like these badass bitches in Portland like started, like these like famous people started this camp, and it just kind of spread. I believe it started in Portland. And honestly, I'm not the best at that. So
that's okay. That's okay.
There's some real history buffs out there that can remember details about things like that. I just get jazzed on the feelings mostly. But they started it and it just spread. Like people wanted to start their own camps. And now actually the Girls Rock Camp Alliance actually does a lot deeper to support anti-racism and equity and just, you know, these movements for liberation that are happening all over the world, really. Mm-hmm. It's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. As well as gender, there are so many other factors that affect people's ability to access music and other equitable services in this country. And it sounds really awesome that a company or an organization like Girls Rock has committed not only to bringing women, non-binary and trans women into the music space that has traditionally mostly been dominated by men, but also support under other marginalized groups as well. You had mentioned, you know, that you had been with the organization Girls Rock for a long time. Can you talk about what maybe some of your favorite parts about working with Girls Rock Denver is?
Yeah, definitely. It's the transformative nature of it. I remember just a couple years. I mean, every year there's at least a couple folks who stand out in particular who kind of come to camp, you know, the first day, and they're just like, I don't know, like, I don't have an opinion, or I'm not good at this, or I don't know how to do this. And then, like, in particular, I remember one year, a young drummer who was like right at, you know, around 11 or 12 years old, which is a really difficult age to be anyway. And she kind of started out at camp just being like, somebody else tell me what to do, kind of. And that's definitely something we don't do. We just say, like, you know, no is kind of a word we don't use a whole lot, even though we, as long as folks are safe, then they can do what they want for the most part. But anyway, by the end of camp, she was just like, you know, she's the drummer, so she's just banging her sticks together on stage in front of hundreds of people, just like, listen to me, you know, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, just, and like, she literally was one of those really powerful examples of somebody who, like, physically you could see the transformation in her experience in her body just over the course of that week, and like how much she believed in herself by the time the week was over. And also, on a very personal level, to be honest, I'm more interested in supporting the volunteers, or I'm most interested in supporting the volunteers and the connections that we make to be in an environment where you're just working with other radical, like gender expansive or femme identified people, and everyone treats each other with respect. There's trust, there's opportunities for growth, there's healthy communication. Like, to me, that's just the kind of environment that I want to be in. And it's kind of a fantasy land, just surrounded by badass bitches. Like, it's phenomenal to just, I've met, you know, people that I admired before I even met them in person. You know, people get like job opportunities. Their dreams kind of blossom because they connect with folks who really are active in the community and have opportunities for people. So it transforms the volunteers' lives also.
And have you had any people who have been campers come back as volunteers?
Yeah, actually one person who's on our leadership team, a couple other folks that play out regularly in the community with their own bands and things like that. So, and then another young person who kind of came as this tiny little 8-year-old, our very first year, little bottle cap glasses and a bass guitar that was bigger than they were. And now they volunteer with us and just support the scene. And it's pretty cool. Cause I remember one of them actually talking about how we were transforming the music scene, and that when these kids grow up and they go out into play a show, they are going to be like, no, actually it's not okay for you to treat me this way or to say these things to me. Like, right. You don't understand what the settings on your amp should be, you know, or just all the little diminishing things that women and girls typically hear that other folks don't hear.
Of course. Yeah. And as someone who has run sound a few times, I definitely understand that experience of being mansplained, for lack of a better thing to call it.
Even having your stuff touched by the sound.
Right. Yeah. And just people thinking they know better, either for whatever reason it is. So I totally understand.
But now we're running sound.
Yeah.
You know, you know, it's kind of shifting the script a little bit.
So what do you see in the continued future of Girls Rock Denver, and what would you like to see it kind of grow into?
Well, I think, you know, being all volunteer, there are some things that haven't worked the way a really well-organized business works. Like, we kind of have always had this like kind of punk approach to what we're doing, where like a lot of us are coming from like an anti-capitalist, anti-oppression framework and just being like, well, we don't want to impose structure too much, you know, or like we don't want to be controlling in certain ways. And to be honest, this last couple years, you know, in 2020, we hosted a virtual camp, and the campers made music videos instead of performing live in front of an audience. It was incredible. But we all were just like, what? How did that happen? And I think we all feel that way every year. We're just like, wait, I was a part of that? Like, that's what was going on in this whole cacophony of rock camp business, you know? But basically, you know, I think also it gave us the opportunity to have a lot of deeper self-reflection as an organization. We were really, I think one thing that happened in the pandemic is that injustice and inequity that was always there was so stark and nobody could turn away. And it really was an opportunity for folks to look at, what do I do and what did the efforts that I'm a part of do to further inequity, or to just sit comfortably without doing anything, or to really be a force of change and good. And we really saw a need for growth, honestly. Mm-hmm. So over this last year, we took the year off. We didn't have a camp in 2021. And we took our core leadership group and provided kind of intensive anti-racism trainings over the course of the year in an organizational structure. Like, how does this impact our budget? How does this impact whether or not we pay people, or how organized or structured we are? And it was really eye-opening to realize that, you know, not providing structure was actually denying folks the opportunity to thrive and like really have everything they needed. You know, you can't just say this is a free for all and whoever shows up is welcome here, because you also end up having a lot of the same folks, and a lot of them might look the same or come from similar backgrounds. Mm-hmm. You know, like,
so
a lot of times
So it came out of about expanding access. That structure, you're hoping that that structure will provide expanded access.
Yes. On both our volunteer and our camper side, because, you know, over the years, we kind of got popular without a lot of intention behind that. You know, it was all kind of word of mouth. And what that meant was that the same people were talking to the same people. And then we look around and we're like, do we really want to primarily serve like white middle-class folks who have access to other summer camp opportunities or other, or who feel pretty empowered or, you know, whatever it might be. And it's like, we really need to do some intentional work. When a couple years ago, we did an after-school program at Ricardo Flores Magón Academy, which is a Title I school where most of the students, their primary language spoken at home is not English. And that we won a grant from Denver Arts and Venues to do an after-school program. And we somehow pulled that together because of some connections that we had, you know, especially in the school. And we actually hired people for that, which was really important and good for us. So anyhow, I see us getting to a place where we can pay people. I would like to see a shift, honestly, we all would, in our leadership, where it's not just the folks who've kind of been around or have the time and privilege to volunteer so much, you know, because maybe they have a job where they can get paid time off or...
Right.
You know, like that's not equitable either. So I think we really do need to see a big shift in how it's run.
And I mean, I also think like regardless of whether or not you have the privilege to take the time off, like it is time that you're taking out of your day and it's work that you're doing and that value deserves to be paid.
Yes, absolutely. And it's about really prioritizing and like kind of pulling our little punk heads out of our asses and saying like, hey, actually, you can actually kind of be more punk sometimes when you have like parameters and people know what's going on.
And that's like the supporting framework to making hopefully Girls Rock a stronger organization here in Denver.
Yeah, exactly.
So in the meantime, like while you're building up this future framework for Girls Rock, that sounds really awesome. What can people do in this moment today, tomorrow, this week, next week, this year to support Girls Rock Denver?
I think if you're interested in being involved, like keeping us in mind to volunteer with us, we want to see more leaders, you know, emerging from the community and again to provide that platform where you can help run the operation or you can help with grant writing. In particular, I think getting us to a sustainable place so that we can pay people, we do need a dedicated team of kind of outreach and fundraisers and grant writing, you know, all that good stuff to get a strong foundation. And then also I'd say if you're running your own program, we should be friends, you know, like if you need sound support for an event you're doing, or if you're youth that has something to say and you just need somebody to help you get loud. If you want to use some of our instruments, like reach out and like, we've got resources that we can share. So honestly, like I'd love to see some real authentic partnerships in different communities. And like we've got stuff that we can share. We've got a network of volunteers. So if you have a project and you need volunteers, we would love to partner with your events too. And then, you know, ideally we'll have our summer camp. We might end up hosting two in the next year, but typically it's going to be like June or July of 2022 is our hope. And it's not just music, you know, like we say music is our vehicle, but these kids, they spend the whole day with us and they go through workshops about leadership. Like we have mayoral candidates, Representative Leslie Harrod came in and talked about like, what's it like running for office, what to expect, how to prep, healthy eating, just a lot around leadership, compassion, empowerment, and self-expression, setting boundaries, trusting your instincts and your voice. It's just, it's really all over the place. It's a very holistic things. So if there's like a workshop or something that you want to put on, like I said, we've got a crew of volunteers and community members that want to learn. We want to share about the stuff that you do too, you know?
Yeah. And so to wrap it up, is there anything that we haven't given you an opportunity to say about Girls Rec Denver that you would love to add?
I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and talk about this. It's been a transformative time, and I'm really hopeful for moving forward. I think a lot of people can say that during these last couple years, and it hasn't been easy. And but I'm really excited about where we're going and how strong and powerful we can be as an organization, because all that means is that our campers and our volunteers feel their own strength and power in the work that they do, because all we do is provide a platform to feel your power.
Well, Shannon, thank you so much for coming on.
And now to our interview with Paul Levine, CEO of Swallow Hill. Thanks so much for coming on, Paul. We wanted to talk about Swallow Hill today. Can you tell us what is Swallow Hill and how does it serve the community?
Sure. Thank you for bringing me on. Swallow Hill is a 40-year-old nonprofit organization that was founded in Denver back in 1979. We are the country's second largest music organization. And when I say music organization, an organization that is a school and a concert promoter and promotes music education in our under-resourced communities. We currently have 35 teachers, down from a pre-COVID number of 70 teachers, but our doors are back open and we have students coming back into our building. And because of COVID, we also have an online music school component that's super exciting, where we have students from 23 different states now and 4 different countries, and teachers from different parts of the country as well. On the concert promotion side, we generally do about 250 shows a year. Our venue at Yale and Broadway here in Denver has 3 theaters, a 90-seat hall, a 100-seat hall, and a 300-seat hall. And then we book for the Denver Botanic Gardens for their amazing summer concert series. And we book at different venues around town, like the Oriental and Central Presbyterian Church and others. And so it's exciting on the concert side. And then on the community outreach side, really, our hallmark is our Little Swallows, where we have a formal music education program where we work with 3- and 4-year-olds in preschools all over Denver. And these are the most under-resourced neighborhoods, under-resourced schools, really giving kids a chance and opportunity to learn and grow through music in a way that they wouldn't be able to otherwise. And pre-COVID, we were in 29 schools working with 2,500 kiddos each and every week. In addition, we do some work in the K-12 school space, and we have some amazing partnerships around music therapy. We have several board-certified music therapists on our team. And so we are an all-encompassing music organization.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
But yeah, I feel like I've gotten a little bit more of a better picture of what Swallow Hill is. Can you tell us a little bit more about the origins of Swallow Hill?
We were founded by an amazing human being, Harry Tuft. And Harry started the Denver Folklore Center selling instruments back in 1962. And he did, you know, some lessons on the side, and he was just trying to make a go of it. And in 79, he really realized that a school was a whole other entity that needed its own support structure. And so he got a group of board members together, and they started this organization. And at the time, the most popular TV show was MASH. If you remember the sitcom MASH, for those of us, you know, of a certain age. And so we named it the Music Association of Swallow Hill, the acronym MASH, so that people would identify.
Okay.
Yeah, right. And it was founded in the Swallow Hill neighborhood, now where Ace and Steuben's is, literally at the site of the 7-Eleven that sits there today. And that was named the Swallow Hill neighborhood, like we have Capitol Hill and Park Hill. And that was Swallow Hill, named after an attorney, and his last name was Swallow.
Interesting. Can you tell us a little bit about your professional background and what led you to your position currently at Swallow Hill?
You know, I've spent my entire professional background working for different organizations and entities right at the intersection of social innovation and civil discourse. And so for us here at Swallow Hill, it's a perfect fit where we really do get to move the needle on impact in society with our community outreach efforts. But more than that, Swallow Hill as a music organization, we tell stories through music. We tell stories through the spoken word, and so it's a great place where we get to put people on stage, some who are singing just wonderfully beautiful, magical, poetic songs, and some that are taking a stance in our society on issues that are important. And so it's a great place to do work.
Awesome. What do you say is your favorite part about working with Swallow Hill?
The people I work with each and every day. We have an amazing team from our school administration team to our concert team and the folks that are running not only our community outreach programs but our fundraising efforts and our behind the scenes efforts. All of our amazing teachers, every one of our teachers, they are all employees. Part-time, they are all gigging musicians. And so Swallow Hill is a place where they get to express themselves and their art and their craft with others and help bring others along. But they're also out in the community making amazing music themselves. And so to be around truly inspirational folks in the creative class is magic each and every day.
Yeah, that sounds great. So if people wanted to help Swallow Hill or do something for Swallow Hill, what would that look like?
People can volunteer. We're always looking for folks to help out behind the scenes or as ticket takers or ushers or greeters at our school. Certainly financial support goes a long way. You know, as all nonprofits these days, we couldn't be here without the people in our community that support us. Swallowhillmusic.org is the place to go and find out how to help more. Come to a show, enroll in a class, be part of our community, build social capital.
Great. And if there's anything that you want to include other than swallowhill.org, I can put that in the show notes as well. Yeah. So is there anything that you would like to add that we haven't talked about?
You know, this last year and a half was hard. It was hard on us. It was hard Definitely. On so many others all over our community. And we're thankful that we're here today, that we're putting on shows in person, that we're putting on classes in person, that we're bringing the community back together again. But we wouldn't be here without all of those in our community that supported us along the way. And we're thankful for our community.
Yeah. So thanks so much, Paul. And thanks, Heather, for setting this up for us.
Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for joining us for this month's podcast. You can find all the links to the things we talked about today in the show notes. Additionally, if you like what we do, you can support us on Venmo, Patreon, or by buying our t-shirts. You can find those linked at denvermusiccommunity.com, also in the show notes. We release a podcast on the last weekend of every month. Thanks for tuning in.